from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Thuy Vu, in for Michael Krasny. Charles Fahn, award-winning chef and owner of the Slanted Door restaurant in San Francisco, has a new cookbook out, Vietnamese Home Cooking. Chef Fahn fled Vietnam with his family during the fall of Saigon when he was just a boy. But he didn't leave behind his love of Vietnamese food. In the next hour, we'll talk with him about his journey from refugee to acclaimed chef and about the food revolution that serves up both recipes and controversy in the Bay Area. That's coming up on Forum after this. Well, he's considered a game changer when it comes to Vietnamese cuisine. Chef Charles Fahn, owner of the Slanted Door restaurant in San Francisco, won the James Beard Award for Best Chef in California in 2004. In the process, he helped to glamorize and popularize Vietnamese food. Since then, he's gone on to open several other restaurants under the Slanted Door group, many of them employing the same people he started out with nearly two decades ago. Charles, welcome to Forum.
Thanks for having me, Thuy.
Well, I was thumbing through your new cookbook, Vietnamese Home Cooking, and it occurred to me that you've been around for about 17 years since Slanted Door first opened in the Mission. What the heck took you so long to come out with a cookbook?
A little nervous about writing, and I feel like you really need to put in your time and hone your craft until you say something, so... could have done it earlier, but I thought it would be better we wait and the fact that I was raising, you know, a family and opening gazillion restaurants, so that take up some time. So
how many restaurants do you have now under the Slanted Door group?
We currently have six. We have two more to be added on in January. So we're opening up with the SF Jazz Center.
Wow.
And doing a little bourbon and fried chicken place called Heartwater in next to the Buffet Building at Pier 3.
Oh, so a little Southern action now in addition to your Vietnamese cooking chops.
Yeah, a little tiny Southern. I like bourbon, and I just have a connection to Southern food and being on the water. I want to do some seafood, and nothing better than Southern seafood with all the gumbo or oyster.
Well, you're obviously branching into other things, but you are best known for Vietnamese cuisine. What is the story behind the Vietnamese food that you're trying to tell in your new book? Because the book is actually a very gorgeous book. It almost reads more like a travel book in the beginning than a traditional cookbook.
Well, when, you know, publisher, you know, would court me and get me to write a book and write a Slanted Door book, and I always thought that somebody needs to explain this whole Vietnamese aesthetic and Vietnamese things I grew up with. You know, I see mom making something, why they put down the, you know, stir fry the beef first, not the garlic first. And some of them are kind of natural because you've been watching so long. And I realize is a lot of them, it has to do with culture and story, but also it has to do with, you know, mechanic and chemistry. And it was the same thing that I was teaching my staff based on these cooking technique. We call them station, let's say the grill station. So there's a do's and don'ts in when grilling. You know, you got to have a hot fire before you put your meat down, all these little things. So, and I just thought that would be better served instead of just give you a shaking beef recipe and don't explain to you why I do what I do. I think it will have more lasting effects on people understand the technique, but also part of it is to get you to understand the Vietnamese ways and the aesthetic. Because I believe food should be, at least the way I look at food, is food's about culture and story. I don't like to just randomly make things up. I like to get creative in solving the problem. I see food as a craft, not something you just get, you know, creative randomly. Like for me, it's just you really got to hone your craft. and mining that history of Vietnam, bringing a little piece of Vietnam back to here. And obviously, you can't get the same ingredients. So that's when you get creative and solving, getting the better scallop and searing it perfectly, or making sure your shaking beef is not overcooked. So the book is really embody all that, sort of give you a basic primer on the Vietnamese aesthetic and the technique.
And aside from that, though, you're really in the perfect area for something like this because there's such a food revolution here in the Bay Area. People here appreciate food. They, like many chefs, regardless of whether they cook a lot themselves, value the craft of cooking, the art of fine dining. What are some of the ingredients or the lifestyle and other aspects of Vietnam that most influence your cooking and how you view your cuisine?
Well, I think once you had tasted better chicken or better food, I mean, a lot of immigrants will get here and they find the ingredient not suitable or doesn't match what their aesthetic is. For instance, if they get the chicken here, the chicken is a little bit more less textural. So there's that. So you already have in your head the kind of thing you want to cook and the kind of flavor. Maybe the tomato that you had in Vietnam is just a little different than here, or the greens. So you in search of that. But also here, there's whole, folks that dedicate their whole lives to growing better, better produce, better meat. So you're expanding your vocabulary on the quality of meat. And of course, like the beef here is much better than Vietnam. So combination of those things, that sort of gelled me into part of me is a San Franciscan, a Californian, part of me is Vietnamese. And that's where we're taking advantage of both world. I came here when I was 15 years old in 1977. And
after the fall of Saigon.
Yeah, I went to Guam in 77. I went to high school here and I went to Berkeley. So my aesthetic is definitely, local and modern. I mean, I like modern architecture, modern design. I like the wine service. And I merged those really two disciplines, the aesthetic of what I learned about here. And truly, you get a better shaking beef and you better dish here just because the quality of the product here are really good. And I had taken folks and staff and friend back to Vietnam, and sometimes we eat the same dish and it was like, whoa, definitely. For instance, we did this crab and cellophane noodle. The crabs are just lumpier, the dungeon is, it's just better, and we have better ingredient, but also you have to have a better technique to pull it off.
I have to agree with that because, I came from Vietnam myself, also came here as a refugee like you, as Saigon fell to the communists. And having been back to Vietnam numerous times, I can honestly say that there are some Vietnamese dishes that I've had here that are much better than what I can get in Vietnam. And so the quality of the ingredients that you mentioned really does make a difference in the final product. And that's not to say you can't find good ingredients in Vietnam, but there are some ingredients like the crab here. It's just phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's hard to top that.
Yeah. It's of course, in Vietnam, there are a lot of great food, and the chickens are better there. So, but also, this country is very wealthy, so, things are shipped all over, fish. Vietnam is still fairly isolated and small. And I find the best food really on the street, food that people are specialized in Vietnam. I find the street food are much more interesting, much more for me, and the high-end restaurant. And I think it's just a matter of time and money. I think, as Ho Chi Minh City developed, I've been going back since early 90s. In the early year, things were really poor, so not fancy restaurants weren't very good. And of course, the restaurant gets better and better every day because now just the city is just booming. You can't get a table most of the night in Ho Chi Minh City.
Not at the good restaurants, for sure. And speaking of street food, I know that in researching your cookbook, you went back to Vietnam and visited a lot of family restaurants, small places, not well known, trying to gather some new recipes for your cookbook. And did you have any luck getting some of the older women to cough up some of their secret recipes?
Oh, they'll never tell you. I mean, I had offer people, you know, $1,000 cash for tips and showing them that I have my passport. I wasn't going to live next door to them and making the same thing. And they won't. And a lot of them, they only have one item they make because they're not going to risk it. What I do is I just go back to the same stand, eat like five times and write down notes and really pay attention, you know, instead of just being wowed by it and write down, you know, what is the texture, you know, and really kind of analyze and kind of come home and try to replicate it. And I think...
So you were in stealth mode.
Well, yeah, they know that I was just ordering way too much food. And I mean, that's really... a lot of folks just get so happy and they just remember being good and they don't really write down and pay attention. What is it the dish is doing? You know, is there acidic in here? Is there... Why is this thing... Why is the texture is good? And the harder thing is really the dough. The technique, let's say some of the rolls and the rice skin, and for them to achieve that elasticity is really hard to figure out how did that happen. But if you know what the gold standard is, then you can always try to shoot for it. You might not get there, but...
Sometimes it's the journey more than the destination.
Yes.
We're talking with Chef Charles Phan about his new cookbook, Vietnamese Home Cooking. Charles is the owner of the Slanted Door Group, which includes the Slanted Door Restaurant, as well as Out the Door, Heaven's Dog, and Wo Hing General Store. He also won the James Beard Award for Best Chef in California in 2004. We'd love to hear from you. Join the conversation by calling 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Or you can email us at forum@kqed.org. You can ask Charles anything, right? Charles, you're open to all kinds of questions today.
I think so.
Let me ask you about, you know, there's you've branched obviously into many different kinds of cuisine. You now offer you know, just very normal everyday hot dogs to Chinese food. And there's been a lot of talk lately about fusion food and whether that's really great anymore. What's your take on fusion food?
Well, in the 80s, it was a hot thing. Then it became like the F word and people kind of shy away from it. I think by definition, I think Vietnamese food, it is a fusion, a collision of two major cuisine of Chinese descent and French. And that's why you end up with the Vietnamese banh mi and baguette. They literally change how you make that baguette in Vietnam through necessity. They don't have the same, probably with some French chef left 50 years ago and it's passed down, you know, from one chef to another. And within the town, people were tweaking it. So the sandwiches that you eat in Vietnam is really the texture. And it's just amazing. You have soy sauce and you have pate, and it's just great, you know. So for me, that already in itself is fusion. But because it's done so many times in Vietnam, you call it Vietnamese food and you don't call it fusion. I think in the past, there's, you know, some folks are just too liberal about, you know, throwing stuff together, you know, blue cheese inside their wonton. Well, that, for me, that doesn't sound very good. I think it's just a natural progression with food, how if you put food and chef together, they can't help themselves but doing it. I mean, you know, you see mayonnaise in Chinese banquet in Hong Kong. Well, how did that happen? It was just like there's no mayonnaise, but they use them.
Well, didn't you put a little bit of mayonnaise yourself in the Vietnamese spring rolls? That was your secret ingredient?
Yes, I did. And mom, it was really, mom had worked for a French hospital. She had worked with, you know, learned back then you live where you work, and she learned how to make all these French food from a French chef. And in Vietnam, she always made mayonnaise from scratch, you know, and that just, there weren't any mayonnaise in a jar in Vietnam. So spring roll one day, it's fairly lean, first of all. You boil shrimp and pork, and throw a little fat in there. It tastes amazing. And when she got here, she was working in a sewing shop, and they would share a secret recipe after the work. And on Mission Street, she worked for a company called Ben Davids, and like 40, 70 ladies and, you know, sewing operator would get off the shift and on the bus stop. And she would share one of the secret recipe in our spring roll. Peanut sauce is the sticky rice and miso sauce, which is not Vietnamese at all. Again, this is fusion to me. And people came here, discovered miso. It's a great umami flavor to the sauce. And the secret is to using sticky rice as a binding agent to make the sauce creamy. Because if you don't have that, if you grind a lot of peanut, you end up with just almost like Skippy with Thai chili in it, you know? You don't want that. And with the sauce. So that's how a lot of this food, even Vietnamese people cooking with ingredients here, and they'll change it because it just, you can't help yourself. But if you have good stuff here, you're going to put it together, taste good, and you're going to use it. But today, you know, the trend is less of the fusion. But it's more about, if you look at all other, it's about technique and about...
And locally sourced.
Locally sourced product and, you know, from sous vide to... food that are, you know, all cross culture. You could have a dashi with swordfish and a lamb loin on the same table.
Let's go to the phone lines now and check in with Jennifer from San Francisco. She has a question for you. Good morning, Jennifer.
Hi, Thuy. What a nice surprise to hear you on the radio, fellow Vietnamese American. Actually, I have a question and a comment for Charles. My first question is, what are your thoughts on MSG? I'm ethnically Northern Vietnamese, and my grandmother, my mother, my aunts, my cousins, everyone cooked with a little bit of, I think it's called something else, glutinous rice, but MSG in their cooking. So wanted to see what your thoughts are on MSG. Secondly, you know, I'm a big supporter of Slanted Door and Vietnamese people in the culinary world. And wanted to ask your opinion on, you know, would you ever go back to kind of catering to, I guess, the Vietnamese community more than the widespread American community?
With your first question, I don't like MSG. I think it's sort of changes. I don't think you're playing fair. I really don't like the feel of it, eating it, tasting it. So I really try to... I don't use any in my food, and sometimes you actually have to be careful. Some of the sauces you buy, like oyster sauce, has them. Another classic sauce, Maggi soy sauce, that, you know, more Vietnamese use that Maggi sauce than anywhere else in the world, more than Germany. It's actually come out of Switzerland.
I didn't know that. Per capita,
more Maggi is served in Vietnam than anywhere else. And I really don't encourage people to use it because it really... you know, heightens the flavor. It doesn't. You know, you can make good food without it, and it's just a lot of restaurant. In fact, I remember hiring my first chef, and one rule I had was no MSG. And she said, "I'm not sure I can take this job because you're going to go bankrupt soon because you don't use MSG." And I asked her, "Do you use that at home?" She said, "Of course not." And I say, "Well, that's my point. Let's do some home cooking." Regard to the second question, I'm always in this caught in between of getting food affordable and taking care of the farmer, buying really great ingredients, and it's a tough spot. You know, we want to pay our people well, and we want to pay our staff well. And there's certain fancy restaurant, you just have to charge those prices to pay everybody and make the whole thing work. But my goal is in the future is to do more, quick service restaurant with lower price point. I mean, my dream is to have, a bowl of pho in somewhere in the middle of Vallejo in a mall somewhere and having an organic pho, you know, maybe for $7. That's
excellent.
My dream, you know.
I'll be there.
We have not opened anything outside of county in San Francisco yet, but we will. We haven't really crossed county line. We're still in San Francisco. But it's a hard question because on one hand, you want to, you know, change and stop buying these commodity products. At the same time, you need to make food affordable for people. But I think there's a way to do it. And hopefully in the coming year, we'll have some little place in suburbia so
yeah.
that we can serve the masses with organic and tasty Vietnamese food.
And pho, or pho, as some people will say it if you're not native Vietnamese, it's one of those great soups that you can have really any time of the day. It's primarily eaten here for lunch or sometimes dinner, but in Vietnam it's served for breakfast at these great street stalls that you can get every morning. It's a very good dish that kind of hits you in the right spot on a cold morning. I wanted to ask you also about your style at home. I mean, you spend a lot of time cooking. When you get home, do you cook, or are you just so sick and tired of it that you delegate that to someone else in the family?
No. My wife, Maria, cooks. She, when I'm home, she's not cooking.
Your wife is Thai?
She's Thai, yes.
She smart lady.
She only cooks when I'm not.
I wouldn't cook either if you were around.
No, I love cooking at home. I cook, and I like to... there's night that we like to go out. So we have kids. So we have Friday night, we usually go out and we cook anything from Moroccan food to Japanese and some, you know, a little less Vietnamese. I mean, actually, I shouldn't say that. We do cook Vietnamese or Chinese food. And the kids are a little spoiled. They always grew up with really good food. So when I'm not on it, they tell me that.
Your worst critics are from within your home. Speaking of criticism, this isn't too bad, but Beth writes to us, and she says the dining room noise in the slanted door at the Ferry Building is way too loud. Will the new restaurant at the SF Jazz Center be any quieter? We want to enjoy both the music and your good food without losing our hearing.
Yes, I have to admit that it is loud. We don't purposely make restaurant loud. In the 80s, you see a lot of high-end restaurant with tablecloth and acoustic treatment, and those things helps. But part of our designs, we don't want the stuffiness with a tablecloth, so we go to a wooden top. With the minute you have wooden top and you have a lot of clinging, you have a busy restaurant, you're going to make a lot of noise. And especially the waterfront with a lot of glass. So, again, those are like we put acoustic consultant come in. And there's like, you know, unless you put some drape over your view, it's hard. It's always a balance. And SF Jazz, we don't know. I mean, we're putting a lot of emphasis on acoustic treatment. And but it could be 300 or 400 people inside that building. And sometimes the buildings are not designed, you know, part of it is designed to house certain setting. And when you got a very busy right before intermission, it might get a little loud. But they are spending a lot of money. And in fact, the sound guy get to say everything on the construction site. He dictate what goes in and goes out. So all our equipment needs to approve by the sound consultant.
So there you go, Beth. You may get that quiet environment after all. We'll continue our conversation about Vietnamese cooking with Chef Charles Phan after a short break. If you'd like to join the discussion, give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. I'm Thuy Vu, sitting in for Michael Krasny. You're listening to KQED. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Thuy Vu, in for Michael Krasny. We're talking about Vietnamese cuisine with Charles Phan, executive chef at The Slanted Door and author of the new cookbook, Vietnamese Home Cooking. He and his family fled Vietnam during the fall of Saigon when he was a boy, and he brought his love of Vietnamese cuisine over with him. Chef Phan also owns six other restaurants, including Out the Door, Heaven's Dog, and Wo Hing General Store. He won the James Beard Award for Best Chef in California in 2004. Let's go straight now to the phone lines, Chef Charles, because we've got a few people here who want to talk to you. Let's start with Hai Ho in Fremont. Welcome to Forum.
Hey, this is Hai Ho. It's good to hear from you on KQED. Question for Charles. One of my all-time favorite dishes is bún riêu. And, you know, it doesn't seem like it's been served quite a lot here in the Bay Area. I'm wondering if Charles knows why and whether that particular recipe is in his new book.
And Charles, you may want to kind of explain what bún riêu is. It's a Vietnamese soup dish.
Bún riêu, originally from Hue, I believe. It's a central region. It's typically the stock could be seafood or pork stock, but usually it's tomato-based with a ground kind of meatball ground with seafood and pork, tomato base with lemongrass. It's seafood, so it's just less popular. It's a little harder to make,
It's very hearty, but it takes time and effort to make.
Yeah.
So you don't see it as much on menus.
And I think because it's serving with a shrimp paste, mumruk, so a lot of restaurants are a little scared to serve. It's a pungent fermented shrimp paste that's served with that dish.
With a very strong smell. That may chase some diners away if you're not used to the smell, I have to admit.
And sadly to say, I don't think it's in the book.
All right, there you go. You just got the world. You just got the word from Charles. Ain't going to be on his menu anytime soon. Let's go to our next caller, Janet in Half Moon Bay. Good morning.
Good morning, and Charles, thanks for being on the show. I live in Half Moon Bay, and I got to tell you, when I heard you say a few moments ago that you were possibly going to expand out of San Francisco, I thought, God, that's exactly what I've been waiting for. We have two Chinese, two Thai, two Japanese, and one brand new Indian restaurant in Half Moon Bay, and nothing from Vietnam. And with all of our fresh vegetables and seafood and local farmers, it would be like such a perfect location to have a wonderful little storefront with pho or something.
Thank you. I love Half Moon Bay. Obviously, a lot of our seafood and crab all come from there, and it's probably perfect weather for hot soup.
It is.
And funny enough, like after 17 years, the entire kitchen, doesn't matter what ethnicity, the favorite food out of everybody is some sort of broth, noodle soup.
Sure. Hits the spot. It's good comfort food.
Yes.
Well, I hope you consider it.
Thank you. We will.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Keep your eyes peeled for the next Charles Phan restaurant in Half Moon Bay, Janet. Thanks for the call. Ilan writes on our webpage, "This is so exciting." This is about your cookbook. "This is so exciting. While my family recipes are great and I began passing them down to my daughter when she was 4 and I gave her her first cooking knife, I'd love to be able to pass on Charles Phan's family recipes." Now, are there a lot of your own family recipes in your cookbook?
Yeah, all the moms always come by and tell me what to do and change things. Essentially, a lot of this recipe actually it's designed for home. It's not even on the restaurant menu, like the ground pork with salted fish. That's one example. There some are harder dishes like bánh cuốn, which is you have to go to Home Depot and get some tools and make a drum and. So those are a little bit more harder. I want to have both. I want things that you make in 5-10 minutes, and things that takes few days. So Because I think a lot of colleagues would love to see the more making rice paper. It's kind of cool. Or making bún, the Vietnamese noodle. So we derive all the stuff, like little, using stuff you have at home, like little potato ricer, try to extrude the noodle to make bún at home. In Vietnam, they have a whole factory. I mean, nobody make bún at home. But here, you know, there's no bún factory, so a noodle factory. So you have to make that. I think family recipe, a lot of these are really designed. Some of this food are really simple because in Vietnam, there's not a lot of refrigeration when I was growing up. So it's not long time. Some are long, but some of them are just really, my goal to get home and get dinner up in 20 minutes, from start to finish.
Do you?
Yeah. I mean, granted, I have a few practice, but, And also, one more note, you should make your daughter pay you a dollar because in our traditions, you don't give knives to – it's sort of a bad omen of several relationships. That's just a little thing in Vietnamese culture. So you make your daughter pay you a dollar or something.
Yeah, that is one of those superstitious beliefs that you don't give someone a knife as a gift. Let's go to Ted in San Francisco now. He would like to talk to you. Good morning, Ted.
Hi. My main question was about fish sauce. I first discovered this. I think this is one of Vietnam's greatest contributions to the world. I wanted to get his maybe suggestions on specific brands, how any tips on using fish sauce best. It's a magic ingredient.
Well, first of all, it actually dates back to the Roman days that the Roman make fish sauce. So we can't claim that we're the only one who invent fish sauce. Obviously, I think Vietnamese make the best fish sauce. Fish sauce is made by anchovy with salt. And I believe it's about 25% salt. And it's not anchovy you think of like an Italian where they put the whole guts and everything in it. So that facilitates the breaking down of the fish. And after 8 months, you get the first press. And different region in Vietnam using different vessel. In Phu Quoc, they use wooden barrel. In Phang Thiệt, in the middle, they use ceramic. I really don't think the vessel make any difference. And what happened is after 8 months, they strain it, they distill. Those are really the best, the most less salt and more depth of flavor. Then they put it back. They get another month or so. For the cheap houses, they mix the salty thing and just stretch it out more. And some of the stuff you buy in the States, it's been kind of homogenized in big vats and they put stabilizer. But in Vietnam, it oxidized pretty fast. So the key to understand good quality fish sauce is first you got to taste it. You don't want a lot of salt. And the color should be more like a nice iced tea, not a dark iced tea, like iced tea with ice, if I can describe that. And you want it, the brand is really all over the map because they knock off name. And there's not one single brand that, the one we use called Three Crab, but sometimes people will fake it and have two crab and a shrimp. So you got to be careful with that. I think the key is to buy them. They're fairly cheap. They're like $2 or $3 a bottle. Taste it. And if you open it for a long time, after 2 or 3 months, you should throw them away because it oxidizes, continue to oxidize, and it gets darker and darker and saltier. You lose the depth of flavor. So the goal to look for fish sauce is the depth of flavor, the umami. And obviously, the salt needs to be there to cure the fish. And what happened, the salt and the fish and the gut, the enzyme, it breaks the fish down. You get this pure liquid fish, basically. And it's great. In fact, it's in a lot of the Italian cooking, believe it or not. But Vietnamese uses it, and the Thai uses it, and Southern China uses it less so. The Chaozhou people in southern China uses it in fish sauce, but we're probably use more than anybody else.
Yeah, even some mainstream restaurants, non-Vietnamese restaurants, are now using in the Bay Area. I see it occasionally on menus. Ted, I hope that you enjoyed your fish sauce 101 primer just now. And moving from fish sauce to soy sauce, one of our callers, listeners, Stephanie, wants to know why not have soy sauce be gluten-free. Otherwise, she left your restaurant, she says.
If you come in, you ask for it, we'll make sure you get gluten-free soy sauce.
Oh, you do have it available.
We do. We use like 10 different soy sauce. So soy sauce is just like wine. There's different maker, different region. Again, you're looking for a depth of flavor, less salt. Some are made with mushrooms, some are soybeans. But the gluten-free, there are a lot of requests, so we usually have things. If it's things we stir-fry, then we can omit it. But if certain things are marinated, like the barbecue sauce, that it's hard for us to extract that out. So
so just come in and ask and see what
you
can
do. I don't think we can really just not have all gluten-free soy sauce just because
We
love so many different soy sauces. It's hard to, you know, give up all of that.
Let's go to our next caller, David. Good morning and welcome.
Yes, good morning. I have a question for Charles. Concerned about pho. As you know, pho is a famous Vietnamese dish, and it's mainly used beef bones to make the stock. And I understand that the U.S. government tries to discourage the use of beef bones because of the mad cow disease problem. So I was wondering if you, when you cook pho, do you use beef bones in your stock? Or if you don't, then do you have any alternatives to beef bone and all kinds of bones and marrows and things like that are used in making pho stock?
By definition, when you say pho in Vietnamese, we usually refer that to beef noodle soup, or we annotate it like saying pho gao, which means chicken noodle soup, pho ball, or beef noodle soup. So pho usually describe the type of noodle and the broth. That's the only thing it describes. So if you don't, first of all, I don't ever hear of the government discouraging using beef bone. The food supply chain, it's safe here. For us, we use only all natural beef bone. We use all the bone that what's called never ever, who was never hormone shot or antibiotic used on these animals. So we pay a little bit more for the bone. I use about 4 different types of bone for my beef noodle soup. We use a neck bone, we use a brisket, we use tail, we use shank. The trick is to buy different bones, you get different, like marrow. The biggest trick in pho, most people, we in Vietnam, we don't have ovens, so we can't really roast the bone. And we blanch the bone with boiling water to wash out the impurity, which seemed a little weird, like you're doing laundry right before to your bone. You're boiling it for about 10, 20 seconds. You let the blood coagulate and seals it up. Then you bring the soup up slowly to get this pure, clear, consommé light broth. But at the same time, if you don't eat beef, a chicken noodle soup, it's amazing. We have another dish called ban can, which is a pork bone. Very clear, very simple, straightforward. I think the key differences with all this soup is the mirepoix. The French cooking, they use celery and carrot for sweetness. We don't put a lot of that sweetness. We only use roasted onion and ginger. And obviously the beef soup's got, you know, cinnamon, all the different spices goes in there afterward. I think if you buy all natural beef bone, you should be safe. And I really haven't heard a lot about the Mad Cow thing in this country for that reason.
Well, we also have a lot of interesting emails. David, thank you so much for sharing that with us. We also have a lot of interesting emails coming in. And now it's time to put on your dating advice hat, okay, Charles? Because Emma May writes, I greatly respect and admire you and your love of the craft. And being a chef myself, would like to know if there are any Vietnamese cookbooks or chefs that inspired you. I am dating a Vietnamese man. MMA is German/Irish, and would love to know a few traditional southern Vietnamese dishes that I could use to, one, woo my Vietnamese Prince Charming, two, impress his mother when she comes over for dinner.
Well, first of all, you have to know who you're wooing, make sure if they're vegetarian or not, and what kind of... It's like, you know...
You might want to ask some questions first.
Yeah, yeah. I think my inspiration, answer to the first part of the question, it's always been, I get inspired, like, not just with Vietnamese chef, but all local chef. When I go, for instance, go cooking charity dinner in New York, and I find out somebody else using a bay scallop out of Maine, and I get inspired that dish, I might not cook the same way, but I might steal the idea of the particular ingredients. And I think as to how to woo the man, I mean, find out if he's a beef guy or he's chicken, is he those basic stuff. Just like a good salesperson, you need to find out, he needs a minivan or a Porsche, you want to make sure he's got children or he's just single. So, and I think, maybe you do a little practice run. I wouldn't do the first run with them if you want a surefire. But I think just the sheer fact that you're cooking for them, they should be grateful and happy that you're giving a try. So.
There you go. The way to a man's heart is through his stomach, right? Or something like that. We're talking with Chef Charles Phan about his new cookbook, Vietnamese Home Cooking. Charles is the owner of the Slanted Door Group, which owns the Slanted Door Restaurant, along with several other restaurants. You have quite a few fans out there. I'm going to consolidate these two comments. One, Tina writes on Facebook, I'm listening from the suburb of Philadelphia, where good Vietnamese restaurants are far and rare. Wants to know, will you expand to the East Coast? And similarly, Sarah on Facebook wants to know if you're going to expand to the East Bay, Oakland, perhaps.
Yeah, I think our goal is to stay local. We flirt with East Coast and New York and different city. At the end of the day, this quality of life and having control of your work, we have not really gone that far. East Bay, like I said earlier, I would love to have a series of restaurants, really simple, you can walk in with a sweatpant and t-shirt kind of place that get quality food. And affordable prices with cool design. East Bay's, and I think, having to surround Bay Area, anywhere we can drive to, I think will definitely, it's a candidate for us to expand to.
And if you would like to join the conversation, once again, our number here at Forum is 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also email us at forum@kqed.org. And I wanted to ask you about a bit of a controversy here in San Francisco. Slanted Door started in the Mission 17 years ago, and Valencia Street since then has really grown up. And just since last spring, there have been 16 new restaurants that have cropped up on Valencia Street. Great for people who love food, but some of the neighbors are complaining. Now there's a petition out there to try to have a moratorium on new restaurants on Valencia. What do you think about that?
Well, first of all, I think any kind of moratorium, any kind of ban, it doesn't work. I mean, we try to open up a restaurant in the Fillmore District, and And there were like 13 commercial neighborhood districts in San Francisco. Some have the word banned and some have written in the law saying they want to keep it at a certain amount of restaurant in the 80s. And a lot of these laws are written, and it takes a long time to get it written, and it just takes a long time to get it off. So I don't believe you should just ban. I think the, you know, just from a basic, you know, sideline looking, I think each neighborhood should define the right amount of restaurant and more like a long-term planning. So maybe you want to have 5 barbershops, 50 restaurants in this particular restaurant, and set those number and just let it be. And that's how one way of controlling how many restaurants could be in there. I mean, San Francisco already have a lot of code that keep big store from coming into small neighborhood. But also, I've been here since the 70s, and you see the influx of neighborhood. I mean, at one point, Union Street was a hotbed for restaurant, and now hardly anything there. You know, Jackson Square, the North Beach. So, and I think having way too many regulation, it kind of doesn't allow people to do it. And Valencia Street was a perfect place because the rents are cheap, and people thought this is a good area. And since we were there 17 years ago, and I think also the city is changing. You can't use the same rule 15 years ago. 15 years ago, you can drive to Chinatown in less than 20 minutes. Now it takes you 40 minutes, yeah. And the traffic gets bad. So I don't believe in these major regulations because it'll just be in the book for a long, long time. And I think you should have sensible regulation, but more thinking like a 20, 30-year span.
Okay, let's go to the phones. Our next caller is Dina from Marin County. Good morning and welcome to Forum.
Oh, I'm such a fan of Vietnamese food. And I live on both coasts. And there's a restaurant, it's back east near Washington, D.C. But they make something called the lotus root salad, which I can almost eat every day of my life. And I'm wondering if you've heard of that and if it's in your cookbook, and I'll buy it if it is.
It is not because I can't get them fresh here. So I think some use canned lotus roots. If that's, I'm thinking about, or it could, a certain time of season, sometimes you could get them fresh. And if you use the papaya salad dressing, that's pretty much similar to the same fish sauce dressing.
And that recipe is in your cookbook?
Yeah.
Okay, so there you go. You can just use the papaya salad dressing recipe and just substitute lotus root, which is available canned. I've used the canned version, I have to admit. Not as good as the fresh version, but it's out there.
Who's the publisher of the cookbook?
10 Speed Press. It's called Vietnamese Home Cooking.
Great.
And also there's a great iPad version.
Oh.
We were the first people that Apple had developed. Traditionally, in the past, it's just a PDF of the book in an iPad. But this one, they actually rewrite the software. There's all kinds of buttons you can push that makes the experience on an iPad much easier to read. Everything is all reformatted for the coloring from the iPad. It's pretty cool. It's got a lot more photographs.
Excellent. Good to know.
For some funny picture of me in the refugee camp in there, too. So.
Oh, well, then I'll definitely get the iPad version. All right. Let's check in with our next caller, Mark from Burlingame. Welcome to Forum.
Yes, hi. Actually, I live in Newark, and I wanted to know if you could recommend any Vietnamese restaurants. Hope that wouldn't get you in trouble or anything, but in that area to try.
You said Newark, Mark?
Yes.
Near
Newark,
Fremont?
Fremont, exactly.
Okay. Okay. I was afraid that you didn't say anything about New Jersey. I don't know Newark. I think one of the thing about a lot of the smaller Vietnamese restaurant is often they don't highlight what they're good at, and they have the menus like 100 items in there. It's kind of berry. And the trick to some of these smaller restaurants, you need to go there a few times and look around and see what's popular. And because, like everybody, they are going to be good at certain things. But sometimes they don't highlight it because a lot of restaurants feel like they got to have 100 things on their menu. So everything's sort of buried among all the text. But you got to go, like anything, you know, trial and error, you know, give it a few shots. And the more Vietnamese food you eat, then you'll know, you know, what you like and what's sort of like the gold standard. And that's how I learn about food is go to a Vietnamese town. I don't just like what the first thing I eat. Sometimes I go back to like same dishes, four different restaurants, see what is really the aesthetic they're looking for. But that's unfortunately, I wish more smaller Asian restaurants would just stop putting everything, like give you like whole binders of stuff.
Yeah, it becomes overwhelming.
And the thing is just they just fear that you need all this stuff and they don't even highlight what they're good at.
Okay.
I had one other really quick question. That is, could you recommend a canned anchovy? Because I have a problem with the high salt treatment at the Mediterranean. I'm talking about the little sardine can style anchovies. Is there such a thing as just a you know, like a sardine type treatment? In other words, not the super high salted anchovy, because it seems like everybody does that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, typically you need a certain amount of salt to cure the fish. They're by weight. So it's try to figure out how to get the salt out of the fish. Like in salted cod, you know, you soak them in warm water and you don't overcook the fish. And maybe you can kind of poach them with oil and some sort and try to get the salt out. It's they kind of need the salt to cure the fish. So... or use less of it, yeah.
All right, Mark, thank you so much. We have very little time left in the program, so I wanted to give you the last chance to leave us with a parting thought. As you reflect back on your life and you look back at your life's journey from war refugee to celebrated chef, what comes to your mind?
I just pinch myself every day, feeling really lucky. I always tell my staff, you got to think like a refugee. You just got to not think the negative thoughts. You know, if you can live with a really worst case scenario, you should try it because you'll never know. Of course, you know, you don't want to, you know, bet on your house and right. Lose your house and lose everything. But like anything, even in cooking, you know, have a backup plan, you know, have my book, and if you really blow up, go to the plan B.
Go for it and pursue your dreams.
Yes, and if you don't try it, you're not going to know.
All right. Charles Fawn, thank you so much. We were joined this hour by Charles Fawn, executive chef at The Slanted Door and author of the cookbook Vietnamese Home Cooking. Thanks for being here. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez. Our engineer today is Paul Lancour. I'm Thuy Vu, in for Michael Krasny. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.